Welcome to this Uvula Audio presentation of L. Frank Baum's Policeman Blue Jay, Volume 3, Chapter 8, Mrs. Hootaway. As the child larks sat side by side upon their limb with the soft gray nest near at hand, the twilight fell and a shadow began to grow and deepen throughout the forest.
"Twink?"
asked Chubbins gravely.
"How do you like it?"
"Well,"
replied the girl,
"it isn't so bad in the daytime, but it's worse at night. That bunch of grass mixed up with the stem of leaves they call a nest isn't much like my pretty white bed at home, Chubbins."
"Nor mine," he agreed. "And, Twink, how ever can we say our prayers when we haven't any hands to hold together?"
"Well, Chub, prayers are more in our hearts than in our hands,"
said the girl.
"It isn't what we do that counts, it's what we feel. But the most that bothers me is what the folks at home will think when we don't come back."
"They'll hunt for us," Chubbins suggested, "and they may come under this tree and call to us."
"Well, if they do, we'll fly right down to them,"
said Twinkle.
"I advise you not fly much in the night,"
said a cheery voice beside them, and Wisp the Squirrel stuck his head out of the hollow where he lived.
"You've had quite a party here today, and they behaved pretty well while the policeman was around, but some of them might not be so friendly if you met them alone."
"Would any bird hurt us?"
asked the girl in surprise.
"Why, I've seen a magpie meet a thrush and fly away alone," replied Whisk. "And the wrens and chickadees avoid the cuckoo as much as possible, because they're fond of being alive. But the policeman keeps the big birds all in order when he's around, and he makes them all afraid to disobey the laws. He's a wonderful fellow, that policeman, Blue Jay, and even we squirrels are glad he's in the forest."
"Why?" asked Chubbins.
"Well, we also fear some of the birds," answered Whisk. "The lady in the third flat, for instance, Mrs. Hootaway, is said to like a squirrel for a midnight snack now and then, when mice and beetles are scarce. It's almost her hour for wakening, so I have to be careful to keep near home."
Cried a harsh voice from above.
"What scandal is this you're talking, Mr. Whisk?"
The squirrel was gone in a flash, but a moment later he put out his head again and turned one bright eye toward the upper part of the tree. There on a perch outside her hollow sat the gray owl, pruning her feathers. It was nearly dark by this time, and through the dusk Mrs. Hootaway's yellow eyes could be seen gleaming bright and wide open.
"What nonsense are you putting into the heads of these little innocents?"
continued the owl in a scolding tone.
"No nonsense at all," said Whisk in reply. "The child larks are safe enough from you, because they're under the protection of Policeman Blue Jay, and he would have a fine revenge if you dared to hurt them. But my case is different. The laws of the birds don't protect squirrels, and when you're abroad, my dear Mrs. Hootaway, I prefer to remain snugly at home."
"To be sure, you're timid and suspicious by nature, my dear Whisk, and you forget that although I have known you for a long time, I have never yet eaten you,"
remarked the owl with a laugh.
"That's my fault, not yours,"
retorted the squirrel.
"Well, I'm not after you tonight, neighbor, nor after birds either. I know where there are 7 fat mice to be had, and until they're all gone, you may cease to worry."
"I'm glad to hear that,"
replied Whisk.
"I wish there were 700 mice to feed your appetite. But I'm not going to run into danger recklessly nonetheless, and it's my bedtime. So good night, Mrs. Hootaway, and good night, my little child larks."
The owl didn't reply, but Twinkle and Chubbins called goodnight to the friendly squirrel and then hopped into their nest and cuddled down close together. The moon was now rising over the trees and flooding the gloom of the forest with its subdued silver radiance. The children were not sleepy. Their new life was too strange and wonderful for them to be able to close their eyes at once, so they were rather pleased when the gray owl settled on the branch beside their nest and began to talk to them.
"I'm used to slanders, my dears,"
she said in a pleasanter tone than she had used before.
"So I don't mind much what neighbor Whis says to me. But I do not wish you to think ill of the owl family, and so I must assure you that we are as gentle and kindly as any feathered creatures of the forest, not excepting the birds of paradise."
"I'm sure of that," replied Twinkle earnestly. "You're too soft and fluffy and pretty to be bad."
"It isn't the prettiness,"
said the gray owl, evidently pleased by the compliment.
"It's the nature of owls to be kind and sympathetic. Those who do not know us very well say harsh things about us, because we fly at night, when most other birds are asleep, and sleep in the daytime, when most other birds are awake."
"Why do you do that?" asked Chubbins.
"Because the strong light hurts our eyes. But although we are abroad in the night, we seek only our natural prey, and obey the great law of the forest more than some others do."
"What's the great law?"
inquired Twinkle curiously.
"Love. It is the moral law that is above all laws made by living creatures. The whole forest is ruled by love more than it is by fear. You may think this strange when you remember that some animals eat birds, and some birds eat animals, and the dreadful creeping things eat us both. But nonetheless, we are so close to nature here that love and tenderness for our kind influences us even more than it does mankind, the careless and unthinking race from which you came. The residents of the forest are good parents, helpful neighbors, and faithful friends. What better than this could be said of us?"
"Nothing, I'm sure, if it's true,"
replied the girl.
"Over in the land of paradise,"
continued the owl thoughtfully,
"the birds are not obliged to take life in order to live themselves, so they call us savage and fierce. But I believe our natures are as kindly as those of the birds of paradise."
"Where is this land of paradise you speak of?"
asked Twinkle.
"Directly in the center of our forest. It's a magical spot, protected from intrusion, not by any wall or barred gates, but by a strong wind that blows all birds away from that magnificent country, except the birds of paradise themselves. There's a legend that man once lived there, but for some unknown crime was driven away. But the birds have always been allowed to inhabit the place, because they did no harm."
"I'd like to see that," said Chubbins.
"So would I,"
confessed the gray owl with a sigh.
"But there is no use of my attempting to get into the paradise of birds, because the wind would just blow me back. But now it's getting quite dark, and I must be off to seek my food. Mrs. Possum and I have agreed to hunt together tonight."
"Who's Mrs. Possum?"
asked the girl.
"An animal living in the lowest hollow of this tree,"
answered the owl.
"She is good-natured, and hunts by night, as I do. And she is slow, but being near the ground, she can spy a mouse much quicker than I can, and then she calls to me to catch it. So between us we get plenty of game, and are helpful to each other. The only drawback is that Mrs. Possum has 4 children, which she carries in a pouch wherever she goes, and they have to be fed as well as their mother. So the possums have 5 mouths to my 1, and it keeps us busy to supply them all."
"It's very kind of you to help her,"
remarked Twinkle.
"Oh, she helps me too,"
returned the owl cheerfully.
"But now, good night, my dears. You'll probably be sound asleep when I get home again."
So off flew Mrs. Hootaway with these words, and her wings moved so noiselessly that she seemed to fade away into the darkness like a ghost. The child lark sat looking at the silver moon for a time, but presently Twinkle's eyelids drooped, and she fell fast asleep, and Chubbins was not long in following her example. Chapter 9. The Destroyers. A loud shouting and a bang that echoed like a clap of thunder through the forest woke the bird children from their dreams. Opening their eyes with a start, they saw the gray dawn was breaking, and a sort of morning twilight made all objects in the forest distinct, yet not so brilliant as the approaching daylight would. Shadows still lay among the bushes and the thickest branches, but between the trees the spaces were clearly visible. The children, rudely awakened by the riot of noise in their ears, could distinguish the barking of dogs, the shouting of men calling to the brutes, and the scream of an animal in deep distress. Immediately after, there was a whirl overhead, and the gray owl settled on the limb beside their nest.
"They've got her!"
she exclaimed in a trembling, terrified voice.
"The men have shot Mrs. Bossom dead, and the dogs are out tearing her four babies limb from limb." "Where are they?"
whispered Twinkle, her little heart beating as violently as if the dread destroyers had always been her mortal enemies.
"Just below us. Isn't it dreadful? We had such a nice night together, and Mrs. Possum was so sweet and loving in caring for her little ones and feeding them. And just as we were nearly home again, the dogs sprang upon my friend, and the men shot her dead. We had not even suspected until then that our foes were in the forest."
Twinkle and Chubbins craned their necks over the edge of the nest and looked down. On the ground stood a man and a boy, and two great dogs were growling fiercely and tearing some bloody, revolting object with their cruel jaws.
"Look out!"
cried the voice of Wisp the Squirrel.
"He's aiming at you! Look out!"
They ducked their heads again, just as the gun roared and flamed fire beneath them.
"Oh!"
wailed Mrs. Hootaway, fluttering violently beside them.
"They struck me this time! The bullet is in my heart! Goodbye, my dears! Remember that all is love! All is love!"
Her voice died away to a whisper, and she toppled from the limb. Twinkle and Chubbins tried to save their dying friend from falling, but the gray owl was so much bigger than they that they could not support the weight of her body. Slowly she sank to the ground and fell upon the earth with a dull sound that was dreadful to hear. Instantly Twinkle darted from the nest and swooped downward, alighting on the ground beside the owl's quivering body. A big dog came bounding toward her. The man was reloading his gun a few paces away.
"Call off your dog!"
Twinkle yelled, wildly excited.
"How dare you shoot the poor harmless birds! Call off your dog, I say!"
But even as she spoke, the words sounded in her own ears strange and unnatural, and more like the chirping of a bird than the language of men. The hunter either did not hear her or did not understand her, and the dog snarled and bared its wicked teeth as it sprang greedily upon the child lark. Twinkle was too terrified to move. She glared upon the approaching monster helplessly, and had almost reached her when a black object fell from the sky with the swiftness of a lightning streak and struck the dog's back, tearing the flesh from its powerful talons and driving a stout, merciless beak straight through the skull of the savage brute. The dog, already dead, straightened out and twitched convulsively. The man shouted angrily and sprang upon the huge bird that had slain his pet, at the same time swinging his gun like a club.
"Quickly,"
said the eagle to Twinkle,
"mount with me as swiftly as you can."
With these words he rose into the air, and Twinkle darted after him, while Chubbins, seeing their flight from his nest, joined them just in time to escape a shot from the boy's deadly gun. The inquisitive squirrel, however, had stuck his head out to see what was happening, and one of the lead bullets buried itself in his breast. Chubbins saw him fall back into his hollow and heard his agonized scream. But he could not stay to help his poor friend. An instant later he had joined the eagle and Twinkle, and was flying as hard and swift as his wonderful lark wings could carry him, up, up, up into the blue sky. The sunshine touched them now, while below the tragic forest still lay buried in gloom.
"We are quite safe here, for I am sure no shot from a gun could reach us,"
said the eagle.
"So let us rest upon our wings for a while. How lucky it is that I happen to be around in time to rescue you, my little friends."
"I'm very grateful indeed,"
answered Twinkle, holding her wings outstretched so that she could float lightly in the air beside her rescuer.
"If you had been an instant later, that dog would have killed me."
Very true,
returned the eagle.
I saw your danger while I was in the air, and determined to act quickly. Although I might myself have been shot by the man had his gun been loaded. But I have noticed that a bold action is often successful, because it causes surprises, and the foe does not know what to do.
I'm ashamed of those people, said Chubbins indignantly. What right do they have to come into the forest and kill the pretty owl, and that dear little squirrel, and the poor Mama Possum and her babies?
They had the right of power,
said the eagle calmly.
It would be a beautiful world were there no destroyers of life in it, but the earth and the air and water would then soon become so crowded that there would be no room for them all to exist. Do not blame the men.
But they're cruel, said Twinkle, to kill innocent, harmless birds and animals instead of the wicked ones that could be better spared.
Cruelty is man's nature,
answered the eagle.
Of all created things, men, tigers, and snakes are known to be the most cruel. From them we expect no mercy. But now, what shall be our next movement? I suppose it will be best for you to keep away from the forest until the men are gone. Would you like to visit my home and meet my wife and children?
Yes, indeed,
cried Twinkle.
If you'll be kind enough to let us.
It will be a great pleasure to me,
said the eagle.
Follow me closely, please.
And he began flying again. They kept at his side, and by and by they noticed a bright, rosy glow coming from a portion of the forest beneath them. What's that? Asked Chubbins.
It's the place called the Paradise of Birds,
answered their conductor.
It's said to be the most beautiful place in all the world, but no one except the birds of paradise are allowed to live there. Those favored birds sometimes enter our part of the forest, but we are never allowed to enter theirs.
I'd like to see that place, said Twinkle.
Well, you two child larks are different from all other birds,
remarked the eagle.
And for that reason, perhaps you would be allowed to visit the paradise that is forbidden the rest of us. If ever I meet one of the beautiful birds that live there, I will ask it to grant you the privilege.
Do, said Twinkle and Chubbins in one breath. They flew for a long time, high in the air, but neither of the bird children seemed to tire in the least. They could not go quite as fast as the eagle, however, who moderated his speed, so that they could keep up with him. Chapter 10. In the Eagle's Nest. Gradually the forest passed out of sight, and only bleak, rugged mountains were below them. One peak rose higher than the others, and faced the sea, and to this point the great eagle directed their flight. On a crag that jutted out from the mountain was the eagle's nest, made of rude sticks of wood gathered from the forest. Sitting beside the nest was Mrs. Eagle, larger and even more pompous than her husband. While squatting upon the edge of the nest were two half-grown eaglets with enormous claws and heads, but rather skinny bodies that were covered with loose and ragged feathers. Neither the nest nor the eaglets appeared to be very clean, and a disagreeable smell hung over the place.
"This is funny,"
said Mrs. Eagle, looking at the child larks with surprise.
"Usually you kill your game before you bring it home, Jonathan, but today it seems our dinner has flown to us willingly." "They're for us!"
cried one of the eaglets, making a quick dash to seize Twinkle, who darted out of his reach.
"One for each of us!"
screamed the other eaglet, rushing at Chubbins.
"Peace. Be quiet,"
said the eagle sternly.
"Cannot you tell friends from food, you foolish youngsters? These are two little friends of mine who I have invited to visit us, so you must treat them in a civil manner."
"Why not eat them?"
asked one of the eaglets, looking at the child larks with hungry eyes.
"Because I forbid you. They are my guests and must be protected and well treated. And even if this were not so, the larks are too small to satisfy your hunger, you little gluttons."
"Jonathan,"
said Mrs. Eagle coldly,
Do not reproach our offspring for their hunger. We sent you out this morning to procure a supply of food, and we expected you to bring us home something good to eat instead of these useless little creatures."
The eagle seemed annoyed at being scolded in this manner.
"I had an adventure in the forest, and came near to being shot and killed by a man. That is the reason I came home so soon."
Twinkle and Chubbins were standing together at the edge of the crag when one of the eaglets suddenly spread out his wide, stiff wings and pushed them over the precipice. They recovered themselves before they had fallen far and flew to the ledge again just in time to see the father eagle cuff his naughty son very soundly. But the mother only laughed in her harsh voice and said,
"It is so early in the day, Jonathan, that I advise you to go again in search of food. Our sweet darlings will not be comforted until they have eaten."
"Very well,"
answered the eagle.
"I am sorry you cannot treat my guests more politely, for they are all unaccustomed to such rudeness. But I see it will be better for me to take them away with me at once."
"Do,"
said Mrs. Eagle, and the eaglets cried,
"Better let us eat them, Daddy. They're not very big, but they're better than no breakfast at all."
"My, but you are disagreeable things," said Twinkle indignantly. "And I don't like you a bit, so there."
"Come on, Twink," said Chubbins. "Let's get out of here."
"I will take you back to the forest,"
the eagle declared, and at once rose into the air. Twinkle and Chubbins followed him, and soon the nest on the crag was left far behind, and they could no longer hear the hoot of the savage young ones. For a time the eagle flew in silence, and then he said,
"You must forgive my family for not being more hospitable. You must know that they live a very lonely life, and have no society because every living thing fears them. But I go abroad more and see more of the world, so I know very well how guests ought to be treated."
"You've been very kind to us, Mr. Eagle," replied the girl lark. "And you saved my life when that dog would have killed me. I don't blame you any for what your family did. My mama says lots of people show off better abroad than they do at home, and that's your case exactly. If I were you, I wouldn't take any more visitors to that nest."
"I do not intend to,"
answered the eagle.
"But I am glad that you think well of me personally, even if you do not think well of my family. And I assure you it has been a real pleasure to assist you. Were you like ordinary birds, you would be beneath my notice. But I am wise enough to understand that you are very unusual and wonderful little creatures, and if at any time I can serve you further, you have but to call me, and I will do what I can for you."
"Thank you very much,"
replied Twinkle, who realized that the great bird had acted more gently toward them than it is the nature of his wild race to do. They had just reached the edge of the forest again when they saw a bird approaching them at great speed, and soon it came near enough for them to see that it was Policeman Blue Jay. He wore his official helmet and carried his club, and as soon as he came beside them, he said,
"Well, thank goodness I found you at last. I've been hunting for an hour, and began to fear you'd met with some misfortune."
"We've been with the eagle," said the girl. "He saved our lives and then carried us away from where the dreadful men were."
"We have had very sad doings in the forest today. Very sad indeed," declared the Blue Jay in a grave voice. "The hunters did even more damage than usual. They killed Jolly Joe the brown bear, and Sam Fox, and Mrs. Possum and her babies, and Wis the squirrel, so that the animals are all in mourning for their friends. But our birds suffer greatly also. Mrs. Hootaway is dead, and three pigeons belonging to a highly respected family. But the saddest of all is the murder of Mr. and Mrs. Goldfinch, both of whom were killed by the same shot. You may remember, my dears, that they were at your reception yesterday, and as gay and happy as any of the company present. In their nest are now five little children, too young and weak to fly, and there's no one to feed them or take care of them."
"Oh, that is dreadful," exclaimed Twinkle. "Can't Chubbins and I do something for the little goldfinches?"
Why, that is why I was so anxious to find you, answered Policeman Blue Jay. You haven't laid any eggs yet, and you have no one to depend on you, so I hoped you could adopt the goldfinch babies.
We will, said Chubbins promptly. We can feed them out of our basket.
Oh, yes,
chimed in the girl.
We couldn't catch grubs for them, you know.
It won't be necessary, observed the policeman with a sly wink at the eagle. They're too young yet to know grubs from grub.
Chapter 11. The Orphans. The eagle now bade them goodbye and flew away in search of prey, while the blue jay and the child larks directed their flight toward that part of the great forest where they lived. "Are you sure the men have gone?" asked Chubbins.
"Yeah," replied the policeman. "They left the forest as soon as they shot Jolly Joe, for the brown bear was so heavy they had to carry him on a pole resting across their shoulders. I hope they don't come back again very soon."
"Did they take Mrs. Hootaway away with them?"
asked Twinkle.
"Yes, they did. She will probably be stuffed, the poor thing."
Presently, they passed near the rosy glow that lit up the center of the forest with its soft radiance, and the girl said,
"That's Paradise Land, where the birds of paradise live. The eagle has promised to ask one of those birds to let us visit their country."
"Oh, I can do better than that if you wish to visit the paradise," responded the blue jay, "for the guardian of the entrance is a special friend of mine, and will do whatever I ask him to."
"Will he really?"
asked the girl in delight.
"To be sure. Some day I will take you over there, and then you'll see what powerful friends Policeman Blue Jay has."
"I'd like to see that,"
declared Twinkle. Their swift flight enabled them to cover the remaining distance very rapidly, and soon they were at home again. They first flew to the nest of the goldfinches, which was in a tree not far from the maple where the lark children lived. There they found the tiny birds, who were yet so new that they were helpless indeed. Mrs. Redbreast was sitting by the nest when they arrived and said,
"The poor orphans are still hungry, although I have fed them all the insects I could find near. But I am glad that you have come, for it is time I was home, looking after my own little ones." "Chubbins and I have adopted the goldfinches," said Twinkle, "so we'll look after them now. But it's very nice of you, Mrs. Redbreast, to take care of them until we arrived." "Well, I like to be neighborly," returned the pretty bird. "And as long as cruel men enter our forest, no mother can tell how soon her own little ones will be orphaned and left helpless."
"That is true," said the policeman, nodding gravely.
So Mrs. Redbreast flew away, and now Chubbins looked curiously into the nest, where several fluffy heads were eagerly lifted, with their bills as wide open as they could possibly stretch.
"They must be just awful hungry, Twink," said the boy.
"Oh, they're always like that. When anybody is around, they open their mouths to be fed, whether they're hungry or not. It's just the way with baby birds," observed Policeman Blue Jay calmly.
"What shall we feed them?"
asked Twinkle.
"Oh, anything at all. They're not very particular," said the Blue Jay.
And then he flew away and left the child larks to their new and interesting task.
"I'll be the father and you be the mother," said Chubbins.
"All right,"
answered Twinkle. Said the tiny goldfinches. Cried the baby goldfinches.
"I wonder if the luncheon in our basket would agree with them,"
remarked the girl, looking at the open mouths reflectively as she perched her own brown body upon the edge of the deep nest.
"Well, we might try it," suggested the boy. "The cop says they're not particular, and what's good enough for us ought to be good enough for them."
So the child larks flew to where the basket hung among the thick leaves of the tree, which had served to prevent the men from discovering it, and crept underneath the cloth that covered it.
"Which do you think they'll like best?" asked Chubbins. "The pickles or the cheese?"
"Neither one,"
Twinkle replied.
"The sandwiches will be best for them. Wait, I'll pick out some of the meat that's between the slices of bread. They'll sure to like that."
"Of course," agreed Chubbins promptly. "They'll think it's bugs."
So each one of them dragged out a big piece of meat from a sandwich, and by holding it fast in one claw, they managed to fly with their burden to the nest of the goldfinch babies.
"Don't give it to them all at once,"
cautioned the girl. It would choke him. I know, said Chubbins. He tore off a tiny bit of the meat and dropped it into one of the wide-open bills. Instantly it was gone and the mouth was open again for more. They tried to divide the dinner equally among them, but they all looked so alike and were so ravenous to eat everything that was dropped into their bills that it was hard work to keep track of which had been fed and which had not. But the child larks were positive that each one had had enough to keep it from starving, because there was a big bulge in front of each little breast that was certain proof of a full crop. The next task of the guardians was to give the birdlets drink. So Twinkle and Chubbins flew to the brook, and by hunting around a while, they found an acorn cup that had fallen from one of the oak trees. This they filled with water, and then Twinkle, who was a trifle larger than the boy lark, clutched the cup firmly with her toes and flew back to the orphans without spilling more than a few drops. They managed to pour some of the water into each of the open mouths, and then Twinkle said,
"There, they won't die of either hunger or thirst in a hurry now, Chub, so we can feed ourselves."
"But their mouths are still open," returned the boy doubtfully.
"It must be a habit they have," she answered. "Wouldn't you think they'd get tired of stretching their bills that way?"
cried the baby goldfinches. "You see," said the boy with a wise look, "they don't know any better. I had a dog once that howled every time we shut him up, but if we let him alone, he stopped howling. We'll go and get something to eat and let these little beggars alone a while. Perhaps they'll shut their mouths by the time we get back again."
"Maybe,"
replied Twinkle. They got their own luncheon from the basket and afterwards perched on the tree near the nest of the little goldfinches. They did not feel at all comfortable in their old nest in the maple, because they could not forget the tragic deaths of the inhabitants of the three hollows in the tree, the three flats, as poor Whisk had merrily called them. During the afternoon, several of the birds came to call upon the orphans, and they all nodded approval when they found the child larks watching over the little ones. Twinkle questioned some of the mothers anxiously about that trick the babies had of keeping their mouths open all the time and crying for food, but she was told to pay no attention to such actions. Nonetheless, the pleadings of the orphans, who were really stuffed full of food, made the child larks so nervous that they hailed with delight the arrival of Policeman Blue Jay in the early evening. The busy officer had brought with them Mrs. Chaffinch, a widow whose husband had been killed a few days before by a savage wildcat. Mrs. Chaffinch declared she would be delighted to become a mother to the little goldfinches and rear them properly. She had always had good success in bringing up her own children, she claimed, and the goldfinches were first cousins to the chaffinches, so she was sure to understand their ways perfectly. Twinkle did not want to give up her charges at first, as she had become interested in them, but Chubbins heaved a sigh of relief and declared he was glad the restless little beggars had a mother that knew more about them than he did. The Blue Jay hinted that the widow's experience would enable her to do more for the baby goldfinches than could a child lark who had never laid an egg. And so Twinkle was forced to yield to his superior judgment. Mrs. Chaffinch settled herself in a motherly manner upon the nest, and the two bird children bade her good night and returned to their own maple tree, where they had a rather wakeful night, because Chubbins thoughtlessly suggested that the place might be haunted by the ghosts of the Gray Owl, Whisk, and Mrs. Possum. But either the poor things had no ghosts, or they were too polite to bother the little child lark.